You're listening to the Daily Radio Ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Proverbs. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in Proverbs chapter 22 with this edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
The other day, we were driving down the road. Nick and I were in the front seat of one of my clunkers. And Nick said, "Dad, we just drive trash. Why do we always just drive trash?" I said, "Son," I said, "how many people do you know own 7 cars and don't owe a dime on any of them?" He started thinking for a little bit and he said, "I see. Well, okay, Dad, I understand now." But that's how you got to think. Now, you could take all 7 of my cars, put them together, and it probably wouldn't come up to the amount of money that we'd have to pay for your car. But they're free. I'm out of debt. The only thing I owe is my house and to love you. That's what Paul says. Owe no man anything except to love one another. Get out of debt, man. That's the best thing I can tell you. That'll do more for your finances than anything else. Here's the dilemma of most Americans today. Because their outgo has exceeded their income, their upkeep is now their downfall. Owe no man anything except to love one another. Start with the items that don't appreciate. Get out of debt on those items. Pay off the credit cards and the furniture and then the cars. Then you can go to work on your mortgage. Get out of debt and stay out of debt. Best thing you can do for you and your family. Well, verse 8 tells us, "He who sows iniquity will reap sorrow, and the rod of his anger will fail." An evil man's anger won't get him out of trouble. "He who has a generous eye will be blessed, for he gives of his bread to the poor. Cast out the scoffer, and contention will leave. Yes, strife and reproach will cease." To get rid of the grumbling, cast out the grumbler. Find a person who's doing the damage. And their mouth is running. Get rid of that person and you won't have any grumbling anymore. Paul told the Corinthians to do this. He told them a little leaven leavens the whole lump. You know, a little bit of yeast contaminates the whole loaf. You know, when a church tolerates chronic complaining or when they put up with a divisive person, it breeds discontent and it breeds division. It's just sad but true. Some people are like cancers. And once those people are discovered, they need to be cut out of the body before the cancer metastasizes and begins to grow and contaminates the whole. He says, "Cast out the scoffer and contention will leave." I heard of a conversation one time between two pastors. One of the pastors, he asked his friend how many people had God added to the church. The pastor replied, "None, but there have been a few blessed subtractions." There are times when it's best to ask someone to leave. Better to do that than let them stay and infect the whole church with a bad attitude. You know, it is true. One bad apple can spoil the whole bunch. Donny Osmond was right. Verse 11. "He who loves purity of heart and has grace on his lips, the king will be his friend. The eyes of the Lord preserve knowledge, but he overthrows the words of the faithless. The lazy man says, 'There's a lion outside. I shall be slain in the streets.'" There's no lion in the streets. Go out on McDaniel's Bridge. You won't find any lions up there. Go home tonight. Get up in the morning and go outside. I guarantee you there won't be any lions on your street. And yet the lazy man, he wakes up and there's a lion outside. I can't go out there and be slain in the streets. Hey, he's just lying. He's lying about the lion. He's making excuses. That's what a lazy man does. He makes excuses. He looks for reasons to stay at home rather than getting up and going to work. The mouth of an immoral woman is a deep pit. He who is abhorred by the Lord will fall there. You know, most women can out-talk most men. Have you noticed this? Women are verbal creatures. Females are the more articulate sex. On the surface, this is neither good nor bad unless there's evil in the heart of that woman. And a dirty girl is a danger, man, because she can talk and she can justify her actions and she's good at casting blame and she flirts and she uses enticing words and she can lure an unsuspecting man into her trap. Solomon says her mouth is a deep pit, and once a man falls into it, it's extremely difficult for him to escape. Verse 15, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him. Don't neglect to spank your kids. I was talking to a guy the other day. He said, you know, my mom and dad never spanked me. And I thought to myself, that's your problem. I realize that our modern society today frowns on this practice. You know, child experts today advocate other forms of discipline. And when it works, I'll listen. Have you seen our society? Do you see what kind of kids we're producing out there? What this no-spank generation is producing? All I see today are out-of-control kids. Just go to a restaurant. Out-of-control kids, undisciplined kids, disrespectful kids, rebellious kids who need a good spanking. I go to a restaurant these days and I think, man, I'd just like to get that, be alone with that kid for 5 minutes. Man, can I take your kid to the car? No, I don't do that. It's been said, God ordained the rod for your child's bod. Who said that? Sandy Adams said that. God ordained the rod for your child's bod. The Bible, God's word, the divine authority on good parenting says to spank your child. So do it. Since the 1960s, society has needed less Spock and more spank. Yes, never spank your kids in anger. Never spank them in anger. Spank them only for defiance. Never for childlike behavior or deficiencies like forgetfulness or lack of coordination or absent-mindedness. Don't spank your kids for being kids. Spank them only for defiance. And spank them only with a rod, not your hand. You know, use a neutral object, a belt or a spoon, or like my grandma used to do, a switch. You don't even know what a switch is, do you? You want them to fear the rod, but welcome your hands. And then spank them only on the bottom where God has placed the extra padding. But by all means, obey God's word and spank your kids. Hey, you can't be lazy. You got to get up. You got to do it. You can't wait till later. You know, you say, I'm going to spank you at halftime. No, that doesn't work. You got to get up and you got to do it right now. It's got to be immediate for it to really have an effect. By all means, though, obey God's word and spank your kids. Once there was a mom, and she had a plaque that she hung above the paddle that she used to spank her children. The plaque read, I need thee every hour. And the kids were never quite sure whether it referred to the Lord or to the board. They weren't quite sure. At my house, it refers to both. For every parent needs both the Lord and the board. He who oppresses the poor to increase his riches, and he who gives to the rich will surely come to poverty. Incline your ear and hear the words of the wise, and apply your heart to my knowledge, for it is a pleasant thing if you keep them within you. Let them all be fixed upon your lips, so that your trust may be in the Lord. I have instructed you today, even you. Verse 20, have I not written to you excellent things of counsels and knowledge? That I may make you know the certainty of the words of truth, that you may answer words of truth to those who sin to you. Do not rob the poor because he is poor, nor oppress the afflicted at the gate, for the Lord will plead their cause and plunder the soul of those who plunder them. Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man do not go, lest you learn his ways and set a snare for your soul. You know, an angry man is trouble to the people around him. You know, stay away from an angry man. You'll get into trouble. Verse 26. Do not be one of those who shakes hands in a pledge, one of those who is surety for debts. Solomon has said this over and over, has he not? Don't co-sign for someone else's loan unless you can pay the loan. He says, if you have nothing with which to pay, why should he take away your bed from under you? I mean, if you can't pay, you'll suffer for someone else's mistakes. Don't co-sign for somebody else's loan. Verse 28, do not remove the ancient landmark which your fathers have set. In other words, don't fudge on your property lines. Keep the property pins in place. You know, Israel was granted land according to family. We're going to learn this in Joshua. And the ancient landmarks went all the way back to Israel's conquest of Canaan. The allotment of the land was not to be tampered with by future generations. Of course, today, leaders in the Middle East should take heed to this warning, should they not? There are nations, including our own, that would like to redraw the borders, that would like to move the ancient landmarks. They do so to their own peril. God is going to punish such action. He says, do not remove the ancient landmark which your fathers have set. The chapter ends, do you see a man who excels in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before unknown men. You know, this is why I love to watch Tiger Woods. This is why I love to watch this guy play golf. Not because I like Tiger Woods. You know, I don't like the guy per se. As a matter of fact, I probably wouldn't go out to lunch with him if he called and invited me. We got nothing in common except like to play golf. But I just love to watch this guy play because he excels at what he does. You know, I like to watch anybody who's excellent at whatever they do, whether they're a golfer or a musician or a painter. I might not even like your style of music, but if you can play, I'll sit there and I'll listen and I'll appreciate it and I'll enjoy it because you're excellent at what you do. I just love to see somebody excel, a painter, even a carpenter, even a tree trimmer. Wayne's come over to my house a couple of times and he's trimmed up my trees and I am always, I stand out there and I get me a glass of lemonade and I sit down on the porch and I watch Wayne work. He climbs up in these 50-foot trees on these stilts and he's got a chainsaw just dangling off his belt and he's whipping the chainsaw out and he's knocking those tree limbs off and it's just amazing. He excels at what he does. Excel at your work and the king will want to meet you. He'll want to see you in action. Chapter 23. When you sit down to eat with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you and put a knife to your throat if you are a man given to appetite. Wow. Do not desire his delicacies, for they are deceptive food. Now here's the warning. Don't let the wealth of others breed discontent in you. And this can happen very easily. I mean, you're enjoying hamburgers at your house until your neighbors invite you over for steaks. All of a sudden, your hamburgers don't taste so good now. You like your furniture until you see their new grouping. Oh my, this is nice. I didn't know it was supposed to be this soft. I mean, your car was just fine until you rode in their new SUV. He's saying, don't desire a friend's delicacies. As Paul said to Timothy, godliness with contentment is great gain. Don't let something that you didn't even know existed a few days ago rob you of your joy and contentment today. Isn't it amazing how that can happen? He says, do not overwork to be rich because of your own understanding. Cease. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. Boy, they do in my house. They fly out of my bank account left and right. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. Riches make themselves wings. They grow wings, don't they? Dollar bills, my dollar bills grow wings. Trust in material stuff and you set yourself up for disappointment. If your confidence is in money, then you'll never feel secure. And one of two tragedies will occur in your life. Either you'll become a workaholic, and you'll work yourself into the ground because you got to have more and you'll never enjoy what you have, or the money you gain will take wings and fly away. All it takes is one major illness or one economic collapse to wipe out a nest egg. This is why we need to put our hope in Jesus. He alone makes life worth living. He says, do not eat the bread of a miser, nor desire his delicacies, for as he thinks in his heart, so is he. This is such a vital verse. It conveys the importance of our thoughts. You know, your life is a reflection of your thought life. As a man thinks, so is he. This is why it's strategic to be selective. Do you pay attention to what you think? Do you pay attention to what goes into your mind? What you think and how you think will ultimately determine the trajectory of your life. Be careful with what you entertain and with what entertains you. Garbage in, garbage out. Secular thoughts produce a secular life. Think godly thoughts. Think about life from a godly perspective. Adopt a biblical, righteous outlook on life. Think God's thoughts and you'll become a godly person. Verse 7 continues, eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you. A snob will invite you to eat, not because he's generous or because he wants to share. He just wants to save face and he hopes that you'll say no, that you'll decline his invitation. I mean, this is like the lunch appointment who offers to pick up the check, knowing full well that you won't let him, but he offers just so that he can look good. That's what this proverb is saying. You need to recognize this attitude when you see it and you need to avoid that person. Or the morsel you have eaten, you will vomit up and waste your pleasant words. That kind of generosity backfires. It's just not worth it. You know, just go ahead and pay it yourself. Verse 9, do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words. Do not remove the ancient landmark, nor enter the fields of the fatherless, for their Redeemer is mighty. He will plead their cause against you. God himself protects those who need protection. Try to take advantage of an orphan and steal his inheritance. Slip out at night and move the pins that mark the property, and God will defend your neighbors. You know, there's a spiritual parallel here as well. You know, American society, as we know it today, was built on ancient landmarks. You know that our form of democracy was spawned by principles which emerged from the Protestant Reformation. Christianity and the Bible are responsible for the America that we know and enjoy today. And yet there are multiple movements afoot today that want to remove our ancient landmarks. They want to rewrite American history and reinterpret our Constitution. America was founded on freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. Yes, it's separation of church and state, but it's not separation of God and state. As Solomon says, our Redeemer is mighty. And the person who messes with the landmarks can expect to ultimately answer to God. Now, verse 12. Apply your heart to instruction and your ears to words of knowledge. Do not withhold correction from a child. For if you beat him with a rod, he won't die. He'll squeal, cry, and act like he's going to die, but he won't die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. Solomon is certainly not suggesting child abuse here. Let me make that clear. The Hebrew word translated beat literally means to strike. And it would better be translated spank. That's what he's referring to as a spanking here. You know, they don't break. You know, if you spank your kid, he won't break. He won't just fall apart, you know. You know, they can take it and it'll get a point across. And it might just save his soul from hell, the scripture says. The stakes are pretty high here, according to Solomon. He says, my son, if your heart is wise, my heart will rejoice. Indeed, I myself, yes, my utmost being will rejoice when your lips speak right things. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but be zealous for the fear of the Lord all the day. For surely there is a hereafter, and your hope will not be cut off. Man, in this life, in this fallen world, we're forced to deal with all kinds of ironies and inconsistencies. You know, good is not always rewarded. Evil is not always punished. You know, it does pay to be good and godly. The problem, though, is that payday doesn't always come in this life. Solomon says, surely there is a hereafter. There is a life yet to come. This life is not all there is to it. There is a heaven and there is a hell. And eternity will provide plenty of time for God to sort out these matters justly and mercifully. You know, in the words of the poet, at the moment it appears that right is forever on the scaffold and wrong is forever on the throne. Don't you sense that sometimes? Don't you think that's the case sometimes? But one day soon that will be reversed. For King Jesus will come and he will reign. And when he does, wrong will forever be on the scaffold and right will forever be on the throne. Verse 19, Hear, my son, and be wise, and guide your heart in the way. Do not mix with winebibbers or drunkards or with gluttonous eaters of meat. Now the winebibbers I wasn't real worried about, but this next place here, this gluttonous eaters of meat, I resemble that remark. For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. Notice this. An addiction to Bud Light or Jack Daniels, according to the Proverbs, is in the same category as an addiction to barbecue ribs or strawberry shortcake. Isn't it amazing how we classify sins conveniently? Oh, that's a horrible sin. Drunkenness. But gluttony. Oh, my. We have church potlucks and fellowship times where we all get gluttonous. We all come to church. We all just get gluttonous together. Call it fellowship. It's amazing. Drunkenness, gluttony, and laziness are all three kissing cousins, and they're all categorized together right here. Now, from here to the end of the chapter, we're warned about women and wine. Chapter 23 exposes the dangers of wealth, wine, and women. Verse 22, listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy the truth and do not sell it. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begets a wise child will delight in him. Let your father and your mother be glad, and let her who bore you rejoice. My son, give me your heart, and let your eyes observe my ways. Verse 27, for a harlot is a deep pit, and a seductress is a narrow well. You know, all forms of lust, pornography and adultery and casual sex and cohabitation and strip clubs and prostitutions, it's all a pit. It's so easy to fall into, but it's so difficult to get out of. You know, in these next few verses, Solomon is calling for his son to learn from his father's mistakes. Boy, if anybody had a lust problem, it was Solomon. You remember in defiance to God's law, he multiplied wives. He had some 700 wives and 300 concubines. Some of his marriages were political conveniences, but lust, believe me, was a major motivation in Solomon's heart. And Solomon describes the harlot. He's thinking here of a professional hooker, but his description also applies to a single woman who needs a man's attention, and so she acts like a harlot in order to feed her own self-esteem. We're told she also lies in wait as for a victim and increases the unfaithful among men. She destroys families. She brings men down, and she takes some perverse delight in that. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? I mean, the man who falls for this woman ends up with terrible hurts that he could have avoided. He says, who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine. Those who go in search of mixed wine. Notice the role that alcohol plays in the sin of adultery. You know, it's easier to forget solemn vows and ignore the feelings of people that are hurting, and to even put your reputation on the shelf once you get a little tipsy. It's amazing the connection here between adultery and alcohol. Solomon warns his son, do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. Notice the expression here, the wine when it is red. That's another way of saying fermented wine. We're not talking about an O'Doul's here. This is a big old can of Sam Adams. And notice Solomon even warns about the alcohol's appearance. It sparkles in the cup, he says.
You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams, here at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is teaching his way through Proverbs verse by verse. Immediately following the Psalms, this book keeps the reader engaged and offers wisdom in the form of practical application. Also, like Psalms, it's comprised of many contributors, so there's not just one author, however. Solomon is identified as the primary source. Phrases like a word to the wise come from this book of application and suggest a purposeful nature to the text. This should come as no surprise, as every word of the Bible has been written with purpose and is intended to provide insight and direction to us. If you would like to learn more about how to apply these teachings, head over to sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain under the About tab. If you're in the Atlanta area, why not come visit us? We have services at 9:15 and 11:15 a.m. There's more information and directions at sandyadams.org. Well, that's about all we have time for today, but we look forward to continuing this study with you in Proverbs. Pastor Sandy has more to share about how you can apply what you've learned from today's message. So come back for more in our next edition. Thanks for listening to Sandy Adams Radio.